Hey, what's up, Geekscapists? Welcome to our brand new Geekscape podcast. And this is actually a Geekscape special. We're going to be talking all about The Falcon and the Winter Soldier, the new Disney Plus MCU series that just wrapped up. And since it wrapped up and you had the full weekend to watch it, well, there's going to be some spoilers coming up. If you're listening to this on the podcast, welcome. If you're listening to this, maybe you're watching on YouTube or Facebook or Twitch, thank you for joining us. The comments are open, so jump on in if you're live, and maybe we'll answer some questions. Ian Kerner is going to join me, and we're going to be breaking this down. If this is not your typical Geekscape, we have typical Geekscapes where I sit down with a guest, we talk a little bit of news and reviews. We got some Mortal Kombat coming up later this week that we'll talk about. So please subscribe if this is not your regular Geekscape, and you're like, hey, I just wanted to find out what they thought of The Falcon and the Winter Soldier, and maybe I want to see what they think about other stuff. You're going to want to subscribe to the podcast. It's on every podcast app. Just search for Geekscape. We're the flagship show. But if you want to listen to some other Geekscape shows, we got a couple across the network that might interest you as well. So just enjoy Geekscape. It's all kind of fun. All right. No more filibustering, Jonathan. We got some Falcon and Winter Soldier to talk about. There's a lot to talk about here. And I only know one person that I want to talk about this stuff with. The person I started the very first Geekscape podcast back in 2006 with. He is a Hollywood insider. He is a comic book aficionado. And he's also our very own super soldier here at Geekscape. That's Ian Kerner. There he is. Ian, how are you, buddy?
I'm doing okay. How are you?
I'm good. You're still wearing your uniform. So as far as alter egos go, like, you're not doing a good job of hiding yours. For those of y'all listening, Ian's wearing his Captain America super soldier top. You just came from training, didn't you?
Yeah, I was hitting the bag. Oddly, even in the outfit, it didn't like bust apart and go flying or anything. But, you know, what are you going to do?
You went light, or there's some vibranium in that punching bag.
Maybe.
So I'm guessing it's a little combination of both. Thank you for sparing that bag. Okay, so Ian, let's just start from the top. We had 6 episodes of The Falcon and the Winter Soldier. You did the Justice League Snyder Cut review with us. More pertinent to this conversation, you talked WandaVision with us. And these two series are not connected narratively, but there might be some connections leading into the later MCU stuff that we get post these two Disney Plus series. We'll see where Loki puts us next month or in 2 months. But let's just start off the way we start off most of these reviews. Like, did you like this
6-part
Falcon Winter Soldier series?
I loved it, but let me say this about connections. You know, as we've seen going from the get-go and back to Avengers, the first one, you know, you have these initially movies that, you know, are very different in terms of who the characters are, and they come together because they're in the same universe. And, you know, you can expect that that's going to happen. Not to jump to the end of this thing, but this thing set up so much else. You know, what I want to say to start off with was just how unexpected this series was. And maybe it shouldn't have been. I mean, I think we should have expected them to draw a lot from the Sam Wilson Captain America series. Which they certainly did in terms of themes, and I was unexpected for me, but so welcome that they drew from Truth, you know, which was, you know, the Isaiah Bradley, Captain America comic book series as well. You know, talk about like the timing, right? Like for this year, having been what it's been, you know, and even down to, you know, the Derek Chauvin verdict this week, and to have that last episode hit, I mean, never could it have been more timely, you know, this series. And it was so good. And, you know, I just remember when it being announced, and, you know, it's funny, my wife is out, but she actually had wanted to listen to this. Maybe she will later instead of doing it live, but because she's never listened. But, you know, I told her how I reference her all the time. She's like, really? I didn't know that. I was like, yeah, why would you know?
She lives with you, so she gets her own specials. Like, she does. Sure you comment on all this stuff like I do.
All the time. We have full conversations. But, you know, she loved WandaVision so much, and she kept saying, oh, Falcon and Soldier, I don't think I care about that one. Because, you know, as people that have listened to these specials before know, you know, I've said for a while, my wife, I got her into the Marvel stuff, and she was really surprised by the soul of it. Like, she'd seen Black Panther, she wanted to see and loved it. And then when I got to go back to the beginning with my stepson and watch all of them, and she was really surprised, particularly the first Captain America, like it just had so much heart and soul. Mm-hmm. And she just didn't realize that the movies had that. And so she comments all the time to the brilliance of the general feeling of both the movie making and the story making, you know, how it all weaves together. So a comment on this was like, she shouldn't discount anything and just go in and be willing to go on a ride, because again, she just expected it to just be the big screen action spectacle, which is the part that she's not really into, but she mm-hmm. loves the story and the character development. And that's the thing that they're doing so well with these shows is that, you know, I mean, look, the movies are already do a pretty good job and they do them over multiple movies, but having the, as Kevin Feige has said, you know, with these series, they're a, it's a 6-hour movie. So mm-hmm. he has that much more time for character development. You know, they have that much more time for it. And they do a wonderful job of doing exactly that. You know, my wife's a writer, so she really appreciates that and the themes. I mean, she cried probably 5 times in the finale, you know?
Really?
Yeah, she just kept talking because of just, I mean, just, the themes of just, you know, for, I mean, look, you know, I'm a white man, me speaking about this stuff, you know, it's, I'm not going to do it justice, you know, as much sure. as, you know, I it resonates with me. I'm Jewish. So, you know, I've had my fair of, you know, prejudice in my life, but it's just not nearly the same. I mean, as my wife likes to say, I mean, I don't think of it as passing exactly, but you know, people don't necessarily know I'm Jewish just looking at me. So it's not my everyday life in the same way. It's not nearly the same experience, but, yeah, it's just, it's so heartening to see, you know, what this series did and touching on, you know, on those themes and those issues. And as I said before, particularly now.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, it's like you wish it was real life.
I think what I want to do, like my approach, but the thing that I appreciated most about this series, and I appreciated a lot of it, I appreciated all of it, but the work that Malcolm Spellman did as showrunner, mm-hmm. I think is fantastic. Like you said, on a thematic level, we were talking about things like police brutality, the privatization of the military. We're talking about racial themes. We're talking about all this injustice. We're talking about all this stuff that, like you said, is current, but let's face it, it's America and it's commentary on America.
Yes.
This stuff you could have done back in the 60s too. Like that is just,
it always would have been, always yes, would have been.
It always would have been typical.
Absolutely.
Or topical. I think
the comics when they came out years ago were topical and yes. resonated, but you know, I mean, but it's just so perfect right now.
That's kind of what I wanted to say was that beyond the themes and the issues that it brought up and addressed in a lot of great ways, just as a, like just picking and choosing pieces of the Captain America mythos was done so economically and so yeah. well that you had Isaiah Bradley from Truth. You had the John Walker stuff addressed. You had like the Madripoor, you know, who do we work for anymore stuff. You had obviously the recent run of Sam becoming Captain America and inheriting the shield as the Falcon Captain America. And I know you can list a ton more because we haven't even touched on the Zemo and Bucky stuff and the Wakanda stuff, but there's a ton in here that they've taken from all across the Captain America mythos going back 40, 50 years.
Yes.
And they've put in this series in a great way. And I'm surprised they fit it all in and did it in such a cool way.
Well, what was really, really smart speaking to that is, you know, let me rewind a little. I'm going to come to this point. But, you know, yeah. when Endgame ended and, you know, Steve had given Sam the shield, you know, immediately we're like, all right, well, what's next? And, do you... In that moment, they couldn't have just jumped right in to a Sam Wilson Captain America movie. I don't think it would have worked. And now it does because because the questions he had were so real and so relevant, you know, and just that line, you know, it feels like someone else's. Well, it isn't, you know, because and the whole thing as I'm watching it and seeing him come alive and even and that, you know, I mean, listen, we're going to get into this, but just. You know, the dynamic between Sam and Bucky is so good. And by the end, you see Bucky's proud of him. And Bucky sees what Steve always knew because he is. He has that thing that Steve had, you know, mm-hmm. that rare thing. You know, it almost begs the question. There's that moment when Zemo asked him about whether he would take the super soldier serum, and he's like, no, he doesn't even hesitate, you know, and it comes, you know, pretty close to the context of the conversation about, oh, the super soldier serum corrupts everybody. Well, not Steve, you know, yes, touche, not Steve. You know, he was that, you know, because it just brings out who you already are. And by the end of the series, you know, Sam could take the super soldier serum. He'd be fine, you know?
Yes. And you know what? I would think maybe he did, because he's the one Captain America who needs a helmet, and he's the only one that doesn't actually wear one. I'm like, wait a minute.
Well,
Captain America wears a helmet. He's not zipping around.
That's a whole other conversation. I want to get to that about.
I'm being silly. I'm being silly about it. But yeah,
here's the thing. You know, I don't want to jump to the end, but let me just say, my hope at the end of last week was, so in the comics, Sam's wings were made by Black Panther years ago, long before he was. Before he became Captain America, he was just Falcon. He had vibranium wings from T'Challa. And the presumption is that it just stayed that way. But it's only recently that this whole idea that the Black Panther's whole costume has this vibranium lace in it. And they don't come out and say it, but I'm kind of hoping that Sam's does, because it makes it much more believable. It's a little unclear, you know, and I watched it a second time, you know, with my wife. And I'm looking for it. And there are times he's taking hits. I mean, the fact that he even gets up from them, you know, you want to think, all right, he has to have some vibranium in that thing. But, you know, it begs the question. It's the same thing, you know. Someone hits the shield, he falls down. He kind of shouldn't. I mean, I guess there's an argument of whether or not he was braced. The vibranium's supposed to absorb it completely, you know. So, you know, maybe it's a quibble about, you know, how the fights are choreographed or whatever else. I'm just saying that, you know, it's like, I want to think that not just the wings, the costume too, has vibranium in it, because otherwise he'd be dead.
Right. You know? I love the way that they use the wings in combat. You got it in the first episode when he's chasing around Bat-Rock. I thought that sequence was amazing, like set the stage.
Yeah.
But throughout the series, when you're seeing like the wings catch him on getting knocked back, when you see the wings being used as a force, when he's turning it up, turning the wings on to knock somebody out or to get to another level or to push something, I think that those choreography to elements.
Brace himself, all of it. Yeah.
Awesome.
Yeah, because
pretty awesome.
They're vibranium, so that, you know, it's not like you're worried that it's going to mess up the aerodynamic ability of them. They're fine.
They're vibranium now, but in that first episode, you see him.
They were vibranium then too, supposedly. Remember, T'Challa remade them, didn't he?
Well, he and Danny Ramirez are fixing the wings, they're fixing Red Wing early on, and Danny Ramirez is the person who inherits becoming the Falcon in the comics, correct?
Yes. Well, inherits it, yes, but it's a different thing.
Right. He almost mutates into a...
No, he does mutate. Yeah, he does. Yeah, exactly. So, and I felt the Easter egg there is that he has a pair of wings so he can become the Falcon, because Sam's now Captain America. Mm-hmm. So I feel like that's set up, whether they do it or not. It's definitely an Easter egg for that.
Yeah, and I love the announcement that Malcolm is going to be doing Captain America 4.
It's Torres, isn't it? Not Ramirez.
I was on the Wikipedia, which I have right now, and I can correct this for you, Geekscapists, if that is the way it works. And it is Danny Ramirez is the actor.
Joaquin Torres
is the character. Right, yeah, Joaquin Torres is the character. Yeah. So my bad on that confusion.
Yes.
But we now have this Captain America 4 that we're looking forward to. It's the same team. We're going to probably see Bucky back, but we're definitely going to see Sam back. We'll probably be seeing Agent Torres back, maybe the introduction of some form of the Falcon there, but let's save it.
So let's save the
Captain America 4 talk a little bit.
Yes. And even just the way the series ended, you know, so cause we're getting to some good, interesting themes about this series. So, you know, I was just saying that, you know, what I wanted to lead up to was when they took Steve out and when they took Tony out, cause let's talk about this in more of a macro sense. You know, there's so many years of stories, of Iron Man stories and some really big stories that they hadn't done yet. There's so many years of Cap stories that they hadn't done yet. Mm-hmm. And you just figured, okay, that's it. And what they did here, they took a few major Steve Captain America stories, and I referenced the Iron Man because we know they're going to do that with Rhodey in Armor Wars, whereas two of the biggest Iron Man stories are Armor Wars and Armor Wars 2. Mm-hmm. So they're going to use Rhodey for it. And I want to talk about how that gets set up here. But in terms of the Captain America stories, so there was a few times in the comics that Steve stopped being Captain America, you know, and it very much had to do in the past with him being disillusioned with the government and, you know, him walking away. Right. And so you had both, you know, the first time he became Nomad.
Yep.
Okay. And the second time he became the Captain. When he did it the second time and he became the Captain, that's when John Walker came in and he was Captain America. And that ultimately led up into a fight between Captain America, John Walker, and the Captain, Steve Rogers. And interestingly, the uniform that the Captain wore ended up becoming the U.S. Agent uniform.
This one right here that we see a little bit in our preview window, if you're watching this live, yet another reference that they went to the core material to mine it for stuff.
The costumes were great.
And when John Walker starts yelling and it starts cheering in the last episode, "I'm back." This is the cover that is super famous of U.S. Agent returning. And, you know, he's a bit imbalanced. And, you know, this Captain America cover for number 354, where John Walker is yelling, "I'm back," and he's wearing the U.S. Agent suit. Like, that was one of my favorite parts of the sixth episode. Great. And one of my favorite parts of the entire series was, like, they did it again. Malcolm and company did it again. They mined the original source material and did it in a great new way.
And you know what we have to call out, Jonathan, seeing as how, you know, we haven't done this till the end. I mean, we have to call out Wyatt Russell. You know, there was so much hate online. I saw a great interview with him because he loves it because, you know, he's, I'm blanking. The series he was just on, that it was, Lodge 49. Okay. You know, he was on a show called Lodge 49 that just ended like last year or so. You know, he did two seasons. And he's just so the opposite of his look in John, you know, he has long hair and a beard and he's this, you know, this surfer punk who had this injury and he's down and out and figuring out his life. And so then the interview I just saw with him, and he's right back to that look. Like that's him when he's not, you know, doing the work, whatever, you know, and he's just really good. He's this great, really nice, soft, you know, energy. Right. And he was being asked about the reaction. He's like, and he's not on, you know, he's not on social media. But somebody asked about, the tweets. It's like, and he's like, yeah, his friend sent them to him. And like, he loved the Up one, you know, like comparing, you know, like how he looks exactly like the guy from Up, you know. it's just great, you know. But the thing is, like people are hating on him, like, because he did a great job.
Yeah.
Exactly how you're supposed to feel. And so I, for one, and I said from the get-go, he's going to become U.S. agent. And he kind of redeemed. It's like John Walker is always kind of an ass. But he's a good guy. He's not a bad guy. And they did such a good job through it. I mean, look, you know, yes, he's a dick. Yes, he's a hothead. You know, yes, he goes too far. But you kind of understand it, you know, why he went that far. I mean, I'm not justifying it. Yeah, he murdered the guy, you know, but you understand what he's going through, particularly in the moment, you know. And ultimately in episode 6, he makes the right decision.
And Ian, that moment where he kills the guy with the shield, that was something that Hydra Steve did, correct? Can you correct that one for me? What was the source material for that Hydra moment? Steve,
but for me, that particular imagery dates back to 254 and Baron Blood, mm-hmm. You know, where, because I remember they'd never seen something like that. Baron Blood was a Nazi vampire that Steve had fought a lot with the invaders. And then in present day, he was dealing with him again. And Baron Blood would always come back to life. And Steve finally ended up, you know, mounted on top of him, fighting him. He's like, yeah, I'm going to come back again. And Steve's like, not this time. And takes the shield exactly like that. And he decapitates him. It's like,
right.
Boom, boom, boom. And you see the blood all over the shield. And it's just like, and it's John Byrne drew it. It's amazing.
Yeah, I remember that. I remember that art circulating when that episode ran. But I remember Steve's actions doing that when he was Hydra Steve. The recent storyline where the Cosmic Cube had changed history and turned him into
And mind you, that's an interesting thing, because there's that rumor out there, are we going to get that? You know, Feige's denying it, but Feige tends to deny things that are true when they get out and he doesn't want them out.
What's the rumor? That the Cosmic Cube's going to bring Steve back?
Multiverse.
Well, I think we're going to get the multiverse, I don't think, is deniable at this time.
No, the multiverse isn't deniable, but that we're going to get Hydra Steve as Steve in the multiverse.
Yes, played by Chris Evans, we don't know.
Right. That's exactly the point. Is that right. So Feige's denial is there's no deal, there's no anything, no talk, nothing. And I mean, those rumors don't come out of anywhere. You get it, right. And then the big question is, and where would you get it? I mean, like, here's the thing is, you know, do you get just a snippet in Doctor Strange so you know it exists? You know, where are they leading? Are they leading to a Secret War thing? And is that the way they bring the X-Men in, you know?
Or like, the Fantastic Four.
Exactly. All of it, you know, like, is it, you know, because do you do a thing that they already existed, you know? So, I mean, listen, I think we've talked about this before. It's really tricky for me. You know, I'm thrilled that we're going to get Fantastic Four and the X-Men in the MCU, but it'll be really weird for me if they're just young versions and they're just showing up now versus them being adults. And fine, give me, you know, the movies of them young, but tell me if those took place in the past. I want them to be contemporary.
Well, Robert Downey wasn't exactly a young actor when he took on Tony Stark. And I think it's okay to introduce Reed Richards and company and Xavier and Charles.
But not as neo-fighting heroes.
No, but as contemporaries. So these people who now decide to fight as superheroes. You can have a Reed Richards in Sue Storm origin story where they are who they are in the Fantastic Four, pre-powers, and they plan the space flight, and you see the space flight. But we don't get that movie because they're normal people. Now that they're in the Fantastic Four, we get that movie. Is that what you're? I mean, that's what I would.
I'm saying that the Fantastic Four. I mean, it's the first family. You know, like they're what started Marvel Comics. For them to just become the Fantastic Four and not be experienced with their powers, and now they're alongside the Avengers, and they're like they're the new guys. That doesn't resonate the same with me. I'd almost rather that it be like, no, they've been around for years. They've been doing that, you know, and after a giant multiversal event, that becomes the reality, you know?
I think it's okay for Reed to be contemporaries of Tony and Pym and all these scientists that we've established. He gets the powers and he's still a contemporary. He's just also now a powered equal to these people who are fighting alongside.
I understand what we're saying. We're not agreeing, and we're hijacking the
soldier conversation. This is where it goes, though.
Yeah. Let's get off the tangent. But
the X-Men, I have not wrapped my head around, but I can understand Charles Xavier raising a school of gifted youngsters in secret because, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah. but Peyton Reed has a plan. Yeah. And we'll get to
Let's say this. We've already seen in the MCU that there's plenty of other things, you know, all the way back to Nick Fury's You Didn't Think You Were the Only One, did you?
Right.
You know, and when we've seen Ant-Man and the Wasp, you know, existed years ago, and there's plenty of other things in the MCU we haven't seen, you know? So it's definitely possible they play it that way.
Okay, well, let's talk about some of the things that we saw for the first time here. I want to talk about the Zemo storyline and Madripoor, because when Madripoor popped up, you know I lost my shit. I was so excited that corner of the Marvel Universe was popping up for the first time, and I was like, oh my goodness, it's such a mainstay, not just in these storylines, but the X-Men storyline. The X-Men have been going to Madripoor a lot recently in the books.
Well, Madripoor was created in the X-Men books.
There you go. So there you go. So
definitely a sign that, you know, I dare say, tricky on the legality of it. I would maybe it would have been a shared thing, but for me, it's definitely a sign that, all right, Disney owns all the X-Men stuff. They can, you know, go anywhere, do anything. I mean, I was hoping for a Patch reference. But you know, I do want to say, and I have to call out my friend Mario, who called that Sharon was power broker from that episode.
Ian, I think, no offense, Mario, love that you're watching, but I think half the internet thought Sharon was the power broker. No offense, Mario. I was getting tweets about it. I think a lot of people guessed that Sharon was the power broker. Yes, she's the power broker, which was not a tough surprise.
That being said, Ian,
her character shift is so drastic. Well, we need to talk about.
I know where you're going. Let me say, we'll go to it whenever you want.
Yeah.
My problem with the idea of her as the power broker is, it doesn't resonate if she blipped. She's gone 5 years. They're only supposed to be back a few months.
And she's established herself as the most powerful person in Madripoor. You're right. It doesn't track.
Now, but mind you, she could have done it before, because, listen, there's time in between, before the blip.
Post-Civil War, yeah.
Yeah. So there's years that she did it. But, but here's the thing. Maybe she didn't blip and she lied about it.
Maybe she didn't blip in the scroll that is her lied about it.
Well, and that's the other aspect of it. But I'm just saying, just to deal with the first thing first, it's just because she says she blipped doesn't mean she did.
Now, the Sharon Carter we know wouldn't have lied about it.
Well,
the Skrull taking a power vacuum and entering it to set up whatever we see in Secret Invasion later on would have lied about it.
I think it, so. Going to that, if she's a Skrull, and the question becomes, when was she taken? I think that, because right away I thought to myself on this episode, well, if she's a Skrull, does she stay power broker and risk her standing, getting the government secrets anyway, for the Skrulls. But I think let's say she's a Skrull and that Skrull was faced in a situation that, okay, this is she's taken over. She's gone after, the illicit aspect of things, and she's manipulating things in the world that way. And now she has this other opportunity. Yeah, and she keeps doing both. I think it makes a lot of sense that she ends up being a Skrull. We don't have Jessica Drew Spider-Woman, who was the big reveal in Secret Invasion as the replaced Skrull. And Mockingbird, right?
Mm-hmm.
So, and I guess she's a better analog for Mockingbird, but in terms of it being more front and center, I think that we ultimately will see that,
That Sharon Carter is a Skrull.
Yes, but I think before that, we're going to see her a bunch. I think certainly, because that's the thing, coming back around, this last episode set up a lot. I think it's obviously set up the power broker appearing in other things. I expect the logical place we'll see her in Armor Wars. She'll probably be the reason for Armor Wars.
Sure.
Because she's going to get those secrets. She's going to get the armors out there. And that's going to lead Rhodey to go on the crusade that in the comics is Tony's. That, okay, it's Tony's legacy. Those armors are out there. He has to shut them down.
Sure.
Okay.
So Armor Wars is going to be a lot of Rhodey just whipping different Iron Man's butts.
Yes.
Yeah.
Cool. Yes,
I'm in. So. Yeah. Sounds fun.
Yeah, I think that'll be awesome. Initially I thought to myself, it seems like a while. Won't we see it before that? But, when you think about it in terms of the movies, we get Armor Wars next year. It's not that long.
That's crazy. That is crazy.
Yeah, they're already doing it.
And we're going to be watching Loki and doing a special by the end of June or early July. And this is nuts.
So many shows coming.
So many shows, including that Secret Invasion show that we've been talking about.
Yes.
Yeah.
So speaking of other things that are coming, so much setup. When Val first shows up, and she's, from the get-go, she's talking about, other opportunities. And right away, everyone always said, here's the question. Is it Dark Avengers or is it Thunderbolts?
And now you're talking about – you're talking about Julia Louis-Dreyfus's Valentina Allegra.
Do we need to discuss her character? Right?
Yeah, let's go ahead and tell the Geekscapers, because I think Marvel was saying, there's a big character introduced in this episode. And then when it was this character, people will go, huh? I had to Wikipedia her. I don't know. Why is this a big deal? Why is it a big deal?
In the comics, for years and years and years, she was Nick Fury's girlfriend in Agent of S.H.I.E.L.D. Okay? And she was fancy, Italian Contessa, all that stuff. I mean, for years, and that's what she was. She always had Nick's back. Go back to the Steranko stuff. She was around forever.
Mm-hmm.
And then, when was it? I think the listeners, I don't know if the listeners really know, from the comics. So in the comics, you had this, very white guy who was in World War II who took something. Instead of the super soldier serum, he took the Infinity Formula. So his aging has slowed down.
And that's the original Nick Fury.
That's the original Nick Fury.
We'll call him David Hasselhoff Nick Fury.
Okay.
It's still canon as far as I'm concerned.
Well, so here's the thing. So, in the comic books, in what was the Ultimate Comic Store, was it like 1999, something like that?
Yes.
Marvel came up with this idea of what if these comics were happening now? And, they started with Ultimate Spider-Man, from which Miles Morales ultimately came out of. But, the vision of Nick Fury, they said, modern Nick Fury, we're going to make him look like Sam Jackson. So when they did the movies initially, they borrowed heavily from the Ultimate line of comics because of this more modern take on things. Ultimately, in the comics, the classic comic line, the Universe 616, started taking a lot of aspects from the Ultimate stuff that worked. Ultimately, they ended up merging the Ultimate Earth in with the 616 Earth.
Talking and, again about that Secret War storyline that exactly. is starting to look yeah. more and more like a great solution for the MCU.
But so the way they dealt with the different Nick Furies is suddenly Nick Fury had a son that, you know, he never knew about. And, you know, now he was Nick Fury Jr. And then they ended up getting rid of Nick Fury Sr. and basically turning him into a Watcher analog.
Yes, they did.
Which I hate that.
But, you didn't like the original Sin storyline? It pulled a lot of strings that, like, it was messy. It was definitely messy.
So they replaced him. So now Nick Fury running around Marvel looks like Samuel Jackson. And sure. it's easier for people that are, you know, joining comics, having seen the movies.
But anyway, it's easier for stockholders, is what you're saying.
Anyway, so coming back around to Val. So before they did that, on a more modern twist, they ended up saying that she was a double agent. And she ended up being Madame Hydra. So because of that, we already have reason to suspect her motives as comic fans. Like, all right, is she good or isn't she? And her little, you know, her little playful stuff. I think what we're getting, what the buildup to is, so we have two different things happen in comics, two different teams that were bad, but were they? So there was Thunderbolts first. Mm-hmm. Thunderbolts was a team that happened during the Heroes Reborn storyline, in which most of the main heroes got shunted to a pocket universe because they let Jim Lee and Rob Liefeld, who at the time, you know, were busy with Image, play with the characters. And they took the Avengers, the Fantastic Four out. And they put them in, and they did something very similar to what they later did with the Ultimates, where it was their own universe, and they started over as if it was modern day and all that. Anyway, not to go off on that tangent, okay, too much. But at that time, there was a big gap in the regular Marvel 616 universe. So suddenly these heroes appeared called the Thunderbolts. And no one knew who they were, and they were there to fight for what's right and just. And the giant reveal, who I can't imagine it in this day and age, but solicitors managed to not reveal this, was at the end of the first issue, they took off their masks and they were the Masters of Evil in disguise. The Masters of Evil were the big Avengers bad guys led by Zemo.
Yeah. And I still remember the shockwaves that storyline gave everybody. And it was what you said, like it was one of the rare master strokes in comics in the late 90s. Because
it was Kurt Busiek. So yeah. I'm surprised, he's a master writer who knows, you know, encyclopedic about, you know, just knows everything. You know, about the history. It was so good. And that book went through many iterations. You know, it evolved a bunch over the years. Eventually, Zemo was pushed out. Hawkeye actually came in. And they redeemed those characters. You know, a lot of them stopped being villains and became true heroes.
Sure.
Even though they've been heroes, been villains for a long time.
And who does that better than Hawkeye? Well, right.
Well, Hawkeye—that was Hawkeye's story, you know.
Right.
Hawkeye was originally Hawkeye's first appearance. He was duped by a spy who had him, you know, robbing Stark Industries to steal secrets. You know, and it was a little honeypot move where she used her feminine wiles to get him to do that. You know, a spy named Natasha Romanoff, the Black Widow.
Mm-hmm.
So again, another a villain initially, and both of them redeemed and became Avengers. So Hawkeye led that team for a long time. And eventually, the Red Hulk, who was, who's Thunderbolt Ross,
yep.
who, you know, we've had, you know, as in his original role in the comics as General Ross, who initially hunted the Hulk, in the comics, he eventually exposed himself to gamma rays and became the Red Hulk and led a Thunderbolts team. So the other storyline that I think they're going to pull from is Dark Avengers, wherein the government at the time, a character that they can't use because he belongs to the Spider-Man world is Norman Osborn. Norman Osborn got himself in a position of authority in the government, and he formed his own team of Avengers with Avengers analogs, basically his own version of the Avengers.
And he got there by saving the world from Secret Invasion.
Yes.
So we are getting Secret Invasion, but you're right. Norman Osborn can't be the hero that saves the world from that and gets elected and then starts the Dark Avengers. We might have to find a different hero or villain that redeems himself.
I think differently. Right. I think they're going to have Val pulling the strings, and maybe you have Zemo as a field leader. You know, I mean, I think I see that coming. And then with, you know, things like US Agent having, I think they're going to have the analogs to the Avengers, you know, sure. So it'll be Thunderbolts with more of a Dark Avengers feel, if that
right.
makes sense.
So it'll be John Walker, Zemo, and a bunch of other gray area heroes.
Question. We know we're getting Abomination in She-Hulk. Makes
sense.
We are.
So talk to me about that. I didn't know that we were getting Abomination in She-Hulk.
Oh, yeah. Yeah,
because he is in the still canon Hulk movie that we got.
That's right. And he's locked in Alaska.
Are we getting the same actor?
Yeah, Tim Roth.
Oh my God, that is whoa! I don't read the trades as much as you do, Ian, and that's great.
She-Hulk, Tim Roth,
fantastic. I love that, and I definitely want to see the leader now.
Right. So we're getting the swordsman in Hawkeye.
Mm-hmm.
So you know, again, he would make sense. As you know, the Hawkeye analog.
Yeah.
Because it can't be Bullseye. Well, it can be, but you know.
It can be now, but you have to reintroduce that character. Exactly. Yeah. Because he's part of the Netflix Marvel Universe. Yeah. And I'm all for it. I'm all for bringing back Mike Coulter. I'm all for bringing back Charlie Cox. And you know who I. Let me tell you, Geekscapist.
We're getting Charlie Cox in Spider-Man.
Supposedly in Spider-Man. You know who I met?
Oh, he's in.
I didn't even tell you, Ian. Last weekend, I met. The actress who played his girlfriend, what's her name? Daredevil's girlfriend. I'm blanking.
Wall.
Deborah Ann Wall. I met her. She was at that LA Comic Con thing that I did.
Yeah, she's really nice. I met her before.
She was great. Very lovely. And a huge D&D player, which is why she was at this event. And
I met her at Comic-Con years ago. A friend of mine actually was representing her, and I met her. Very nice.
No, she's very cool and a definite tabletop gaming geek. All right. Okay, so we've strayed away from Falcon Winter Soldier, but Geekscapist, that's why you download this show, is so that you can listen to Ian put a ton of context around what was going on, because as Jeff Loeb, no longer in the MCU, said, like, everything's connected. Okay, so we have this... Valentina character, Julia Louis-Dreyfus, and it is actually like a really big character. If all these things play out, we get some version of the Thunderbolts, so we get some secret invasion, this is all going to be a pretty big character.
So they've acknowledged that she's in Black Widow, and Black Widow was supposed to have come out before.
Okay, now I'm just reeling. That's huge.
Yeah. So the character's in Black Widow, and Black Widow was supposed to be out already, so... Her showing up in this would have resonated differently if Black Widow had already been out. We'd seen her in it already. And like, oh, it's all connected. Now we're getting her as an introduction. So then we'll see her in Black Widow. And it's probably not going to matter. Oh, that's the other thing. Yelena Belova,
yes.
Who in the comics was just a, you know, who replaced Natasha at a certain point. And then it ended up being bad for a bit. And then, you know, now works with Natasha and respects her. In the movie, they've started making her a sister. So the rumors are, since Natasha's dead in the present day, Yelena's going to replace her as Black Widow.
That was an easy one to see, though. That was one that, yeah, that Absolutely. Was pretty easy. When you started seeing the synergy between the movie and the comics, and obviously that movie should have come out a year ago, if not for COVID, then you saw that in the comics, the synergy going on already, and they were setting that up. Okay, so... Ian, there's a lot of stuff going on. Your buddy Mario, he showed up in the comments, and he said that Coulter is being actually recast as Luke Cage. That's already been made public, and probably so is Finn, who played
I
hadn't heard it either, and Geekscape, just take it with a grain of salt. No disrespect to Mario. I hadn't read it either. Again, I've not been reading the trades recently. So like I said on this week's Geekscape, when it comes to geek stuff, like, I'm a mile wide, like an inch thin on my knowledge. So,
my question becomes: is the statement he's being recast because Coulter's busy? He's on Evil, you know, so he probably isn't even available. But is that a definitive decision that they're using Paramount Iron Fist sometime soon? He's being recast. Like, is there a plan in place? I don't know.
I don't. Here's why I don't fully. I love Mario. He's a good dude, and using the same Krav Maga skills that he uses with you, Ian, as your training partner, he can.
No, he's my teacher.
He can squash me like a grape. He will kill me immediately. Oh my God, Mario, please do not kill me after I say this, but because there hasn't been an announcement of an Iron Fist or a Power Man in the MCU as we know it currently, I'm going to take that that Mike Coulter recasting of the grain of salt, unless you want to send us the, or link the article in the, yeah, in the comments, Geekscape. If you go to our Facebook, where Mario is posting from, maybe it'll be right there in the comments.
I truly hope that they show some respect because, you know, cause they were connected and I know that it was, you know, there was a sort of a separation between, you know, the TV stuff and the cinematic stuff. But I mean, I would like that resolved, you know. Even in a recast, I would like those storylines resolved.
Yeah.
My wife commented actually watching this how, you know, as good as the Netflix shows were, these are just so much better. I said, yeah, they're truly cinematic and everything. But there was still a lot I liked about those shows. And, you know, I would like them to be acknowledged. Look, as bad as Iron Fist season one was, season two was infinitely better.
Iron Fist and there was stuff, a ton better.
And season three looked like it would have been great.
And we in some of these characters that we've talked about, like Mockingbird, she was in Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D.
And I loved her in Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. Yeah. They tried twice to give her that spinoff show. And I was bummed that, you know, after that, I mean, honestly, they couldn't have because of the Orville. But, you know, like, I hope she'd come back.
So, Ian, we talked about this Valentina character. I think a big character that we need to talk about is Isaiah Bradley. The fact that, I mean, we knew this was coming. But the fact that they brought this character in from the Truth miniseries, which was
so good,
almost like an Elseworlds when it came out, this Truth miniseries, it took a while for it to become canon. And I mean, correct me if I'm wrong. I didn't think it was canon until Young Avengers revealed that his grandson was part.
But that wasn't that much after.
It was like 3 or 4 years, right?
Was it that long?
When Truth came out, it was a pretty great storyline right off the bat.
Oh, yeah.
But it didn't include any of the other Marvel characters necessarily. It kind of felt like it was in its own window. And then you got Young Avengers and they did that masterstroke of saying that the Patriot character in Young Avengers is the grandson of Isaiah Bradley. And suddenly those Truth issues became hot stuff because it was absolutely canon. I loved that Truth miniseries that introduced Isaiah Bradley. And I thought including him here again, like I said at the top of the show, is another masterstroke by Malcolm Spellman and the team. Absolutely. To include all these different aspects of the Captain America universe in a nice economic way in 6 episodes.
And you know, there's a lot that was clever about it. You know, in the comic, the idea was that it was the trials and just like Tuskegee, where before Steve Rogers, you know, there were others that, you know, they'd done, of course, they'd done the test on black people, like Tuskegee in that horrible way. It's an interesting thing, actually, what they did, and this is a very subtle thing. I don't know if this resonates with you. The fact that they actually placed him later is relevant. The reason it's relevant is in the comics, they had a couple of replacement Captain Americas when Steve was frozen. A couple of times they tried to duplicate the super soldier serum and they'd all pretty much go insane. Okay. One in particular in the 50s. And he had a Bucky actually, who was Jack Monroe, who actually ended up not staying insane, came out of cryo years later and he became Nomad.
Okay. So there's a lot of info, Ian. I hope the Geekscapers appreciate it.
So yeah. So Jack Monroe was a character. He was the Bucky of the 1950s. Who his Captain America was insane. He came out at one point, Steve's fought him and beat him. But anyway, the reason I'm referencing that is, so what they've revealed to us here is that, of course, it makes sense. They kept trying to recreate Captain America. So Isaiah Bradley here was around in the 50s and fought Bucky as Winter Soldier.
Mm-hmm. I love that introduction when you see them in the house for the first time and they're talking a little bit of smack to each other. I loved that. That was awesome.
Yeah.
And that really was a highlight for me because especially in that episode 5, it was a highlight of episode 5, which I felt was like the lull before the big finale. And that scene where you have him telling Sam, they're never going to go for a black Captain America. This will never happen. This country will turn on you like it did on me. They put me in jail after everything they did to me. I thought that was probably to me like the heart of that commentary that the series did on what we went through in the 60s, what we've been through, you know, a country that was built on slavery and very much topical for what we've gone through the last few weeks and the last year in this country.
Yeah.
That dialogue right there between the two of them was definitely one that I rewound and rewatched because it was huge and the precursor to the speech we got on episode 6 from Sam, just really nailing things, you know, and nailing that commentary.
And I love when he actually says to Sam in 6, you know, you're special, you know, Malcolm or Martin. And I actually like him saying it that way, because the idea here is that because he is so special and he was beyond contemporary, he was before them, you know, mm-hmm. like, you know, so he's, you know, it's a different thing, right?
Yeah. He got the endorsement from somebody who saw them all come up, you know. So that was huge. Let's talk about the fun stuff. Baron Zemo, who became a cult favorite. And
Baron Zemo's dancing?
He was awesome. I texted you and Justin. Like, I didn't think it was a spoiler, but I was crying laughing so much. I'd pretty much guessed that you had seen the episode, but Justin had not. And I pretty much texted you.
I watched every one of them at midnight.
Yeah, I know. I texted you almost immediately, and I said, Turkish Delight, irresistible. Which... It just had me laughing. They gave him so many good lines. They gave him so many great character turns. And ultimately, they put him on the raft along with the villain, along with a lot of these flag smashers from the last episode. The raft is also introduced in this series. Is that not where they put everybody in Civil War at the end of Civil War? Yeah. So the raft is now being reintroduced as a powder keg in the Marvel Universe. I'm going to go ahead and say, like, that shit's going to come back and bite them.
Yeah. Well, speaking of Zemo, you know, it was one of my big issues with Civil War. I love that Zemo was a villain, but it wasn't Zemo.
He was my favorite part of Civil War.
But it wasn't classic Zemo. One fell swoop, they did almost everything about Zemo. You know, they made him Baron Zemo. You had the mask, you had the coat, the whole thing. I mean, the only thing I'm really missing is his father was a Nazi in the war, that stuff. We didn't get that. You know, It's all that's left. You know, but yeah.
And he was also a pretty good barometer on the whole commentary of the need for super soldiers. I like that he was anti-super soldier. I like that he didn't suddenly want the serum for himself, because that
was interesting. Yeah, it would have been hypocritical.
It would have been hypocritical. And
but you thought he was going to take it, right? In that scene, you're waiting. The obvious thing would have been for him to take it.
Well, it was a masterstroke. It was a masterstroke that he looked at it, and there was that pregnant moment. And he doesn't fall prey to it. He destroys it. Whereas John Walker takes it and uses it. And it's like, oh, man, like, who's the actual villain here? And it goes back to what I'm saying. It's that they did a great job of stuffing this thing full of stuff across the Captain America mythos. And then, like you said, putting this underlying message in gray area and all of it to allow discussion.
I love the whole idea that, you know, John Walker gets his ass completely kicked by the Dora Milaje, and he straight up says it. They don't even have a super soldier serum. They beat my ass. You know, like, it's not even close. I mean, like, literally down to, like, throwing a spear through the straps on the shield. I mean, like, it's like they just effortlessly kicked his ass.
Yeah, the fight choreography on this was fantastic. We talked about how they brought the wings into as part of the fight choreography. I love the partial redemption of John there at the end of that 6th episode, because you really think he's going to come in all violence and just mess things up for Sam and Bucky, but he actually tries to redeem himself.
Yeah.
And even though I was screaming arrest him when he was just standing there watching everybody get put in trucks, you know, when you're seeing the flag smashers get put into trucks at the end after everything's been wrapped up and Sam's given his speech and the bad guy's got to go to jail, I kept saying, now arrest John Walker. Next.
Did you find it weird that you have the cops say, yeah, one world, and you think it's like going to lead to a breakout, and then they get blown up? Like, was that?
No. I mean, listen, Feige can only have so many spinning plates, all right,
pal? Well, I didn't know. Was that a purposeful misdirect? Is that what they did there?
You know what? I'm not over. I actually didn't even make a note to overthink it. Like, I was just like,
you see my point, right? Like, you think he says that, so you think they're about to get broken out, and then Zemo's henchman blows them up.
Mm-hmm. But keep in mind, they're also super soldiers. Let's erase them. Let's take them off the board. That is what Zemo's henchman would be ordered to do.
Of course he would. I'm just saying the cop right before, it seemed like they were about to get broken out.
Yeah, it's a nice misdirect, but I don't think that it's anything beyond Zemo continuing his agenda of removing super soldiers from the planet.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, on the Zemo side of it. No question.
And when he ultimately gets broken out of the raft and they create thunderbolts and all that, like, it's going to be awesome.
Yeah, I agree.
Okay, so Ian, there's a lot that we can continue to talk about, but I think we nailed a lot of the main points, especially like the idea that Sharon Carter and Valentina's characters are going to lead a little bit into Secret Invasion, that we saw Rhodey in episode one. That's just going to go into Armor Wars. Where is this going to lead into other things, especially since Captain America 4 got announced?
So this was, it was interesting. You know, obviously the show was Falcon and Winter Soldier. And then when they across the screen, when it said it's Captain America and Winter Soldier. And I know my first thought was like, all right, are they saying that's what this show now is? Is that season two? You know, and obviously watching it initially at midnight that night, the next day you get the announcement of Captain America 4. So,
correct. Say what you just said. The final title in the series was Captain America and the Winter Soldier, correct?
Right, right. Yeah. So the question became, of course, immediately, all right, are they saying now that that's what this series now is? Are we getting another season and that's what it is? You know, then there's the announcement of Captain America 4. Is that what that is? Mm-hmm. You know, those are the questions we have now. I'm taking it as... this series has now, at the end, it was Captain America and the Winter Soldier. You know, yes. The Falcon and the Winter Soldier became that, and that's all that meant. And now, so what's next? Well, the fact that, you know, we have, you know, the showrunner, one of the other writers of this series, now announced writing Captain America 4, we're getting that's where Sam goes next.
And he fights what? And is Bucky there too?
I hope Bucky's there because it's great.
Okay. It's B, fun. Yeah.
As for what he fights, I'm not sure. Mm-hmm. I'm not sure what that story is.
We're not going to see that movie before 2023, are we?
No.
Yeah.
No. I mean, they're writing it now, presumably. I mean, listen, it's Marvel. They could have been writing it for the last year.
Sure.
You know, I mean, for all we know, it's going to camera, you know, in the next couple of months. But even so... early 2023 would be the soonest we're getting that.
But Marvel likes giving us things every 3 weeks at this point. Yeah. Awesome. I mean, COVID's been responsible for some of that, but Ian.
Oh, no, Jonathan, come June,
it's insane.
Every week you get something.
We're getting the Loki. We're getting the we're getting Black Widow. We're getting Shang-Chi. You saw that Shang-Chi trailer. We're getting Eternals. We're getting just nonstop barrage of stuff. Hawkeye,
She-Hulk, Hawkeye, Ms. Marvel, What If?
We got to talk about What If.
Moon Knight. You know what,
Ian? We may also have to talk about MODOK, which just looks hilarious.
It looks so good. Now that is left over from Jeff Loeb stuff.
Right.
That's the last thing from that. But oh my god, that looks so funny and so awesome.
I think it's fun. It looks great. Where does this leave Bucky? I know we talked about Captain America 5, but or 4, but this does seem like Bucky has his own path as well, and he can kind of become his own thing, or I think like a free agent in a lot of the Marvel properties, in the same way that, you know, maybe Nick Fury was, or Sharon Carter.
What you're referring to, it's sort of in the comics. I think, you know, that they tried to have Bucky as a free agent and roam around, do different things, and. You know, they had him be the man on the wall, which supposedly Nick Fury was for years, which was like this guy. You know, by the way, that reference to a thought Captain America was on the moon, I took that as a reference to that.
Where he becomes like a watcher type.
Yes.
It's a good,
yes.
Good call. So, one thing that I texted you by episode 3 with was they are acting like Steve is dead.
That, that's the thing is we don't actually have any idea what they've told the public about Steve Rogers. And that's actually one of my biggest issues in the show is like, we don't know. We know that, I mean, he went back in time. What do they tell people? You know, he came back old. What do they tell people? You know, now he's gone. You know, Sam has the shield. They had to say something.
Right.
You know, but I feel like that little comment, oh, I thought he was on the moon. Is like, literally like, I don't think people know.
Right.
They know he's gone. That's what they know. You know?
I don't know.
The reality is that the Avengers, they had no duty to tell anyone anything.
Right. So we will, you believe, start to see the reassemblage of the Avengers in the next 3-4 years?
Well, you know, what's interesting is we did see in an Endgame that Black Widow was running this thing where it was actually a intergalactic Avengers, right? She had... people out there doing things.
Mm-hmm.
We don't know if anyone has taken on that role, and presumably nobody has. And so you have the government trying to act to do that, right? So the question becomes, at what point, you know, how long do they go? Does it take a Thunderbolts Dark Avengers kind of thing forming before someone else, perhaps Sam, saying, hey, no, you know, Sam and Rhodey together or something, going, we need to get together and put this down. You know, the Avengers has to exist again.
Yeah, maybe that's a post-Secret War type thing, or post-Armor Wars, or post... I mean, what are the big movies that are coming up? Like, we don't have an Avengers movie on the slate.
Well, we're in Phase 4. We don't know how long Phase 4 lasts. You know, that's one of the conversations is, where are we going? You know, in the past, the phases all culminated with something. Obviously, the major culmination was bringing it all together in Infinity War and then to Endgame, right? There's a couple of different things that, you know, I think we may be leading to. You know, we all speculated Galactus and Fantastic Four.
And things are very much going cosmic.
Right. We've also speculated Kang, right, for time travel.
And that Kang has been confirmed, for sure.
I felt, coming off WandaVision, I think that Dormammu was not a one-off in Doctor Strange. And even the multiverse aspect of that, I think that, you know, Dormammu may be leading into being a bigger bad with the multiverse and Wanda studying the Darkhold.
Mm-hmm. And isn't Kang also an agent of the multiverse if he's a time jumper?
They could certainly go that route.
Because clearly, you know, he's in Ant-Man and the Wasp too. And it's called Multiverse Funhouse. What's the movie called? The next Ant-Man and I know that Doctor Strange 2 is Multiverse of Madness.
Yeah.
I think Ant-Man and the Wasp has a fun multiverse title.
I didn't know that. So we know Kang's showing up there. We'll see. It's interesting. What I wanted to say is the Darkhold that Scarlet Witch is studying at the end of WandaVision, which was I believe, was actually a little scene cut out of Doctor Strange in the Multiverse of Madness. If you go by Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., you know that it's actually deriving its power from Dormammu.
Yeah, and here we go. Ant-Man 3 is called Quantumania. That's Ant-Man and the Wasp, Quantumania. So that's all Quantum Realm. That's a bit of the multiverse as well. They've used the quantum realm to traverse the multiverse a lot. So, and they did that in Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. as well. So,
it's all connected.
Xander Dancer off of YouTube threw that to us. Thank you for watching and thank you for commenting and saving this guy's butt, who's supposed to be like head geek at Geekscape, but again, mile wide, inch thick, like inch deep. That's why I got to get... So I got to get Ian here, our resident super soldier and comic book encyclopedia. Dude, we can keep going, but I think we need to call a recess until the next Marvel project, which I think is Loki, because Black Widow's in July, correct?
Right.
I think Loki and Black Widow are going to be...
before that.
But Loki is going to be ending around the time Black Widow comes out, so you're going to have Geekscape as two more of these.
I think literally what they're doing is from Loki on, it's something every week.
Oh my goodness, Ian! Not that I don't love you, not that I don't love having these specials with you. We're going to be drowning in Marvel content, and it's a good thing. I mean, 12-year-old Jonathan dreaming that there was going to be any of this is insanity. Insanity. I wish nothing but like the best to Malcolm Spellman and his team going into Captain America 4. They did something that was awesome. And I think that new Marvel viewers who came in because of WandaVision, they stuck around for this one. And I think they're doing as Stephanie did, and they're going back and they're exploring the rest of the Marvel universe. And this was the highest rated Disney Plus show, including Mandalorian. So
crazy.
It's working. And,
sure is
huge. Ian, buddy, thank you so much for coming on Geekscape.
Thanks for having me.
It's huge having you here. Geekscapists, if you want more of this kind of content, go ahead and subscribe to the Geekscape podcast. We have another episode coming to you later this week because I've watched Mortal Kombat like 17 times by now, and I can't wait to talk to you guys about Mortal Kombat. So if you subscribe, I've seen it once, and Ian texted me and said, is Mortal Kombat good? And I will not reveal what I told him. because
that's not actually what I said, but I won't say what I actually said.
So we're going to talk Mortal Kombat later this week, Geekscapists. So subscribe to the podcast. Come back here. You'll see that announcement of when we're doing the live episode coming up soon. We have tons of Geekscapes. So just find us on social media and subscribe and all that stuff. And Ian is at Ian L. Kerner on Twitter. You can, you know, cool, man. Let's go back to the movies. I'm completely vaxxed and I'm ready. All right. Let's do it. Well, wait, did you get vaxxed or did you get the super soldier serum?
I'll never tell.
All right, Geekscapists. We will talk to you next time. Geekscape forever. Over and out. Peace.
You're listening to the Geekscape Network.